All right, people, we're back with episode 21 of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. Now, let's touch base on a few things before we get the episode up and rolling. The first is, as per usual, a massive thank you for all the love and support that you guys are continuously giving me in the whole process of getting this podcast out there to the masses and waking people up in the process. So what I'm looking for, guys, I always ask if you can drop me a review on iTunes as just giving something back in return for me. But I'm also gonna drop the offer that if you can send me a screenshot of you sharing this podcast or any podcast within this series so far, I'll send you an exclusive 15% discount on primalalchemy.co.uk that you can use to purchase anything within the store. So yeah. Make the most of it, guys. We've got our flagship Vitruvian protein, which is our organic whey protein superfood blend powder. We've got our ancestral coaching potential programs, which are great if you're looking to get yourself signed on to a personalized fitness program, a personalized nutrition program, or even if you want some one-to-one with myself to do with what I call enlightened biohacking, which is a combination of all of the latest scientific biohack in today's modern world, combined with some ancient ancestral wisdom, some ancient spiritual practices to really put you on that next fucking level. Okay, sounds. So, moving on to today's episode, we have Mr. Brian Sanders on, aka Food Lies. Brian is the director of a new up-and-coming documentary called Food Lies, which is going to cover pretty much it's a revolutionary documentary, guys, and I'm really looking forward to it. And Brian is one of the one of those guys that's standing for truth within the industry, and there's not many of them. And the documentary is going to be covering a lot of the misconceptions that we believe as nutritional fact. When you dig a little bit deeper behind the scenes and see what's going on, you find that a lot of the quote unquote facts within the science of nutrition aren't really facts. They're just more so deeply ingrained ideologies and beliefs that's been placed there for reasons that may not be beneficial for yourself. So yeah, Brian is a great character in that he calls bullshit on a lot of the norms within the world of health, fitness, and nutrition. And we had a really good chat. We discussed his up-and-coming documentary, Food Lies, but we also just broke down a lot of the common myths and debunked a lot of the popular themes within the world of nutrition in 2019, in that a lot of the stuff that we're being told is good for us is complete bullshit and lies. And Brian has solid science to back that up. And yeah, me and him had a we had a really good chat, connected well, and I hope you guys really love this one. So show some love for Brian. Show some love for the Red Pill Initiation Hour. Time to get woke as fuck. Episode 21, rolling out.
You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below, what lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality. The whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path. Looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar as we go deep down to the molecular level. Tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use a nature to heal. With a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal. And your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self. Self-mastery, it's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this Red Pill Initiation Hour. With this Red Pill Initiation Hour, brought to you by Primal Alchemy.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Oh shit, we're live. All right, guys, welcome back to episode 21. That's right, episode 21, guys. We're making it big time now. So let's get on with today's show. Really, really good guest today. We're in a world that we're living in today with so much bullshit, so much misinformation, so much disinformation. It's great to have some truth warriors out there putting in the good work and really putting out invaluable information for people to really change their life around when it comes to their nutritional habits and, yeah, just supplying all-around great content. And today's guest is Mr. Brian Sanders. Brian is also known as Food Lies on Instagram. He has a documentary in the works that's going to be being launched in early spring of this year, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in this podcast. But yeah, let's just jump straight into it. So Brian, thanks for coming on, dude.
Hey, Chris. Yeah, excited to be here and talk about all this stuff.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, as you know yourself, man, it's like there's so much bullshittery. There's so much fake news. There's so much misinformed health gurus out there. And in today's age, it's like Instagram essentially is the modern day scientific journals which people get their information from. And there's so many people out there that's just chats utter bollocks when it comes to nutrition with no sound understanding of our ancestral history, our dietary history, our dietary requirements. They've got no understanding of biochemistry, physiology, and they just recite and regurgitate memes that they've seen from, I guess, if we're going to jump straight into it, man, you know what? I know that me and you are both have similar thoughts on this, but on plant-based accounts and spewing out their propaganda, how meat kills, how saturated fats is going to fuck you up and give you heart disease and all the kinds of shit that normally gets thrown under the bus, or what I should say, gives fat a bad name. But yeah, we can jump straight into this, man. So before we get into that, though, could you give everyone a little bit of a background information just for people that aren't aware or unfamiliar with your work?
Yeah. So I started in film growing up, and also with my family. My family plays into the story as we were going by the normal nutrition advice that we were given and eating like low fat products and tons of starches and rice and pasta. And we didn't really eat out much. So it wasn't like we were unhealthy. Then, you know, I got a mechanical engineering degree from UCLA, which kind of gave me a backbone of this scientific knowledge and, you know, logical thinking, critical thinking and all that kind of stuff. So that was great. And then I went on with my life. I got into tech, got back into film. And then I started getting really into nutrition because I actually lost both my parents to chronic disease. They were eating, you know, what they thought was a healthy diet their whole life, but they were just kind of getting that belly fat, you know, and they grew older and just had problems. They didn't even have like type 2 diabetes or anything, but I just know they had problems with blood sugar and stuff like that. And so my dad passed away of cancer, and my mom is in stage 7 of Alzheimer's. And I think that their diet over the course of their whole life really played a role in that. And we're starting to figure that stuff out now. I mean, now people understand that diet affects type 2 diabetes and heart disease and obesity. But really, the new research is around Alzheimer's and cancers and how those are metabolic problems and problems with, you know, insulin resistance in the brain. And so that really set me off on this course to change my health, where I was always in shape playing sports. You know, I was never, you know, I was a little bit chubby for a little bit, you know, during college, you know, eating a bad diet, stuff like that. But I really had great changes once I started getting into this world of sort of ancestral health, whole foods, you know, that really changed things for me. So I think that's important too, because a lot of people come to this world and their health was a mess, or they were 200 pounds overweight. And then, yeah, of course you're going to have a lot of great changes. But I think it's really interesting to note that I was already in shape and still had amazing changes by changing the way I ate.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. There's a lot of, I think it's a story of extremes. It's if you're in real bad shape, just say you're someone that's been brought up on a standardized American diet, which is pretty much kind of been pushed on the rest of the world. So obviously being here in the UK, our sort of dietary guidelines are very similar
mm-hmm.
To that of the standardized American diet. And if you follow that your whole life, like it doesn't take long nowadays to really start to see the adverse effects of the generations before us. They sort of inherited a lot of genetic wealth from their parents, their grandparents, and further on through their family lineage. So that they kind of, it kind of allowed them to mitigate a lot of these effects as all of this sort of the processed foods, the genetically modified foods, all of this was pretty new to them. But now my generation and the generation below me, like I'm 25 now, so even the generation before me, even people, I'd say people that were born in the 80s or so, yeah, from there on out, 80s forward, they were really starting to see the effects of malnutrition, of poison, essentially. Yeah. And it's the point I was trying to make originally is that if you got someone right at the opposite end of the scale who's just like, just got absolutely dire health when it comes to like it might be obesity, they might have chronic inflammation, they might have neurodegenerative issues. If they go on to any diet to cut out, and they at least cut out that sort of our main sort of prime suspects, which is going to be like refined carbohydrate, sugar, it's going to be like hydrogenated vegetable oils, or all of that sort of jazz that's been introduced in the last century or so, then you're going to see some big effects. But as me and you both know, there is a lot more to this story than meets the eye. And there's a lot of things that I want to talk about. And maybe we can just lay a little bit of a foundation for everyone that's listening in terms of where did the deception all begin? Like the most familiar one, or the most common one that people know once they get into this whole conspiracy of the sort of demonization of saturated fats or just fats in general, obviously comes from Ansel Keys and his research back in the day. But I understand that it stems a little bit deeper into time than that. And have you got anything to say on that?
Yeah. I've been hearing about studying this stuff for years now, and it does go farther back. And I think the main people behind this research are Belinda and Gary Fetke, who are over in Tasmania. And he got silenced by his medical board for trying to tell people not to eat sugar who are diabetic. And so it's crazy because he's an orthopedic surgeon. And, you know, if it gets too bad, he's the one chopping off people's legs and toes because they're diabetes. And all he's saying is, hey, don't eat these refined grains and sugar and polyunsaturated oils. And the dietitians, it went against basically the dietitians, the food industries, the sanitarium, which is part of the story, and John Harvey Kellogg is part of the story as well. So these people, even before Ansel Keys, this is what laid the groundwork for Ansel Keys, is a lot of sort of religious reasons why people thought meat was bad. And to recap the story, him and his wife did such great research because they wanted to go back and figure out, why do we have this impression that meat is bad in the first place? It doesn't really make sense, right? They had the science is so sound that it's good for us. Then why? Where do we get this idea in the first place? And I mean, it started really in the 1860s, as a woman called Ellen G. White who had visions, and this was during the temperance movement where women were trying to get rights. I mean, they didn't have as many rights. Their husbands were beating them, stuff like that, right? So they wanted to stop alcohol. And then they also threw in meat, where they didn't really know. They didn't have good science back then. And they thought that meat made men angry. This woman had these visions that she was sort of like this prophet of the Seventh-day Adventist church. And she thought that meat, you know, was unclean. It made men angry and violent. And they kind of went on from there. And they also thought that they should be eating the Garden of Eden diet, right? So there, it was this religious thing where like, well, everything, they should only be eating what grew in the Garden of Eden, which is all plant-based, you know, vegan diet, and that it's unclean not to. And that progressed into someone named Lena Cooper, who started the Seventh-day Adventists more later in the early 1900s. And so, yeah, John Carvey Kellogg was around. He was a typesetter. He was a 13-year-old kid, like typesetting for the Seventh-day Adventists and putting out their information, and was heavily influenced. And so me back then, they even thought it was like an anti-masturbation thing. They thought that it caused masturbation and that it may, you know, it was unclean, all these things. So they set up, so Kellogg actually has patents on cornflakes. So he invented the cereal, and he thought it was this sort of plain, bland thing that is the opposite of meat, that would stop you from having these impure thoughts. And he went on to set up sanitariums that helped people to like get clean and, you know, no meat. And then he went on to create this giant cereal company. And there's a bunch of these cereal companies that all came about during this day. And this message of anti-meat started around then. And so that pushed forward to the 30s, 40s, 50s. And then that's when Ansel Keys came around. So they're getting these ideas that meat was bad. They also didn't have great, you know, care for refrigeration and sanitation. So, I mean, sometimes people would get sick from meat, you know, and in the late 1800s, they're moving in from the farms to the cities. And, you know, now you're eating meat on the farm and it was fine. And now you're transporting it without refrigeration. And yeah, I mean, I guess sometimes people got sick from meat. So this anti-meat thing started with just this religious information. And they're a huge publishing house, the Seventh-day Adventists are, with tons of radio stations, publishers. They're the second biggest biggest educator in the world after the Catholic Church, even though there's very little, there's only 0.03% of the population is Seventh-day Adventist. So they're pushing this information huge, and it just has taken over society. So then Ansel Keys, you know, did his bad research. We didn't have a lot of science back then. So we didn't, you know, we didn't really understand cholesterol and saturated fat. And then I think it continued on after that, into the 60s and 70s, at least in America, it was like the hippie movement, right? And people were like, save the world. And everyone was about, oh, plant-based is the only way we can save the planet. And just this generational knowledge is what Gary Fetke calls it, is that you're just taught this and you believe it. Your professors tell you it and you have to believe it, right? It's like it's in the textbooks and they read it in their textbooks. So once this got ingrained in our head that meat was bad, it just kept going. And that's where we are today, where it's just kind of accepted that meat is bad. So they keep changing the story too. So they said, oh, it's unclean, it's unpure, it's not, you know, God doesn't want us to eat meat. And then it changes to violence. Then it changes to, oh, it's saturated fat and cholesterol. Then they're like, oh, okay, now it's cancer. You know, they'll use some like weak epidemiological studies that are associational, and they'll try to fudge it to make it seem like there was like a little bit of a risk of cancer that increased. And that's a whole nother story, where I interviewed someone, a PhD at the USDA, that was on that panel, who was on the working group of the WHO that decided meat causes cancer. And he said that it was, they completely ignored tons of evidence. They threw out scientific studies that showed the opposite. They relied on this weak associational data, and a lot of them were vegans on the panel, and he voted against it. But that's a whole nother story. So then the newest one is the environmental thing. So now this whole plant-based agenda is going towards, well, it's bad for the environment, and that cows are killing the environment, and there's methane, and it's global warming, all this stuff, which I kind of believed in before a few years ago, and I started looking into, and that is all pretty opposite actually of what they're saying. So that's a lot of stuff I just spit out, but we can dive into any one of them if you want.
Yeah, let's jump into your interview with the guy from the World Health
Organization.
The USDA, yeah. Yeah, USDA, that's the one.
Yeah, so that was cool. His name is Dr. David Klerfeld, and I had to get special clearance to interview him. I don't think he's ever been like on a podcast or anything like that. And yeah, he's just sort of a normal guy. He's not like, oh, I'm a carnivore. Like, you know, he's not a Sean Baker type guy. He's just a reasonable scientist. And so he was one of the few people lobbying for that. Hey, look at this study. Like, why are we not looking at these actual clinical data or like studies that look at the actual mechanisms that would cause cancer, because they're not really there. You know, you guys are just using food questionnaires or, you know, these studies that don't show causation, right? If people aren't familiar with epidemiology, it's just showing correlations, right? You can't make any causative conclusions from them. So yeah, he basically just said, yeah, there's a bunch of vegans. They didn't, they just had their agenda going in and they got their wish and they won the vote. And then they trumped up the numbers to make it seem like it caused, it's way more dangerous than it is, where there's a relative risk, you know, compared to a absolute risk, which, you know, if the chance of cancer went up from like 1.1 to 0.2, then they say it'll double. Right. That's an example of, but it actually only went up 0.1. But yeah, technically it did double, your risk doubled. So they'll use these savvy sort of ways to trick people and just make it seem worse than it is.
Yeah. It's the common theme of the rope-a-dope. They have their ways. They're very slippery. They're very clever and manipulative. Yeah. Manipulative.
Yeah. They are. Yeah. Well, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they do. And what's your opinion, Brian? Like, what is their agenda? Because I've got my kind of opinion on what it is, but I'd like to know what is this whole plant-based vegan agenda? Is it something that are they at heart believing the shit that they're saying, or is there something malevolent and sinister going on behind the scenes that's the driving force within this whole movement?
Okay. I think deep down they're trying to do good. Most people are just trying to not harm animals. But the problem is there's people at the top who have an agenda, and they probably do think that they're, you know, on the right side of history. They're on the side of good. They have their own agenda, and or they don't even know that they're continuing other people's agenda. So it's a huge mix of deception or ignorance, which is a post I did the other day on Instagram where, yeah, these companies, a lot of it is backed by giant food companies, right? So it's not like it's kind of half a conspiracy, half not. These big food companies want to make money. That's not, they're not like trying to kill people. They're not trying to, it's not like our healthcare system is, you know, we're trying to keep people in the hospital. I don't think that's the case. It's that they're trying to make money. A lot of these food companies are backing these big plant-based agenda things, like the Eat Lancet thing that just came out and got picked up by every news outlet and saying that we should all be on this almost plant-based diet and only have 7 grams of beef per day and 2 eggs per week. So a lot of vegans are jumping on board with that. So they just think they're doing it for the good reasons, but they don't realize that Coca-Cola and like Unilever and these giant companies are behind it, right? So they're pushing out this information. They're using millions and billions of dollars to push out their agenda, but it's under the guise of, oh, well, this is good for the planet. And I think some people, if you cherry pick your data, if you're biased and you go down your own little rabbit hole and don't listen to the other side of the data, then maybe you can convince yourself that this is better for the environment, because you're only listening to that entrenched belief of meat being bad or the cows being bad for the environment, when you don't understand the other side, that these cows are helping the environment in the most case when they're raised properly, and a lot of them are, and that's actually you know, adding to the soil health and sequestering carbon back into the soil. So they just will ignore that part of the story willfully, or just people are biased, right? It's hard to be unbiased and to look at both sides of things. It took me a while to get sort of good at that. And, you know, when you start down a path, you're like, I'm going to prove my point, and you only look up things that agree with you. But over my journey making this film, I had to look at both sides and came to a realization I can't do that. And I need to watch vegan videos and understand what they're talking about. And I listen to people with opposing opinions, and I have them on my own podcast and let them talk. So yeah, I think people need to do that and be more open-minded, and they will come to different conclusions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, man. It's a human trait that we have in order to get stuck in a certain ideology, a certain belief system, and we only align ourselves with false opinions or quote-unquote facts that resonate with that. And mm-hmm. if it doesn't, you obviously get hit with that sort of cognitive dissonance where there is a schism within your internal sort of psychological mechanism that allows you to sort of rationally take on this information, because it's colliding with something that's you kind of identify with. So if there's contradicting information, you're automatically just gonna throw it under the bus and call bullshit on it, mm-hmm. because that's you identify with the other half. And I'm interested to know, man, I know that you're very well wised up with all of this, and I'd love to be able to deconstruct it with you. Mm-hmm. The sort of the main arguments that the vegan community as a whole, what are their strong points? Like, what do they have that is a legitimate strong point to back up their sort of message, their movement? And how would you deconstruct that and be able to deliver it a alternative sort of message to them that's not going to trigger them and send them off on a massive run?
Yeah, that's what I've been trying to figure out how to do. And I've learned some tactful methods lately. And yeah, I end up talking to a lot of people in social situations where someone will throw me their girlfriend at a party, and they're like, hey, this is a guy who says that meat's awesome and making a movie about it. So, you know, it's hard. So yeah, there's three main arguments that we could go one by one, or sort of arenas of arguments. There's the environmental, there's the nutritional, and there's the moral, right? So their big arguments with environmental is about the cows, and it's ruining the environment, and that they're taking up all the land, and that they're all stuck in, you know, little cages for their whole life. So all of those arguments fall apart when you start looking into it. And I have to actually go to farms. I mean, you have to actually talk to real people. You can't just go online, because you'll never get through the anti-meat rhetoric, right? You're always going to just find that. So when I started doing this and visiting farms and filming with these people and seeing how they care for the animals, for one, the animal cruelty stuff kind of went away. These people love their animals. They're trying to make a living too. It's like, why would they have their animals in miserable conditions? And that's not going to make for a good product. You don't want like a sickly, messed up cow. It's not going to thrive. It's not going to produce a good product for them. So it's just misaligned with their interests in general and human interests that anyone would torture animals like that. You know, they find one case where, you know, one bad actor, you know, one, there's always these people that are evil, you know, like they're just messed up. There's like 1% of the world that's just messed up. And so they'll find that one farmer, and then they'll get some video of that, and then they'll spread it around like this is happening everywhere. So that's not happening everywhere. All cows are on pasture for 2/3 of their life, right? They spend most of their life on pasture. And then, regrettably, a large majority of them go to a feedlot, but that's not always bad. That feedlot has on-site vets taking care of them. They have warmth. They have ample room to move around. They have great food. They're getting what they need. They're getting optimum forage. They have They're eating, and also it's not all just this corn, wheat, and soy. People think, oh, we're growing millions of acres of you know, soy or corn to feed to cows, and that's not really true. I mean, they're eating leftover food waste that we weren't going to eat anyway. They're eating forage and other grasses that we can't eat anyway, or that are just growing on site. And then, yes, yeah, some of it is grain, but it's not actually, you know, that bad. It's not all these numbers are just inflated when people, vegans, talk about them. And especially in other countries, the U.S. is actually very efficient with their feedlots, and it's actually helps keep the cows off then the lands, you know. I guess if they're producing methane, they're producing a lot less methane because they're around for a lot less time because our ways are so efficient, right? And then the bad things, the bad situations that the vegans might be talking about are in third world countries where they have very poor practices, or, you know, this isn't really happening as much as you think. They always just use the worst case scenario, like in another country where they don't do things properly and they raise, you know, just feed them a bunch of soy and use a bunch of land. And that's just not the main case. So the environmental aspect kind of breaks down, especially when you do proper raising of animals, rotational grazing, have all different names for it, mob intensive grazing, where if you move animals around on a plot of land and you move them every day, they actually, all their manure feeds the grass and they move on, and then they can go in a circle and they can come back, and now that part of the paddock that they were on a month earlier is now grown back again, and now the soil is healthier and all the nitrogen and nutrients are back in the soil. And so what's really bad is doing the opposite of that, is just having monocrops and tearing apart ecosystems just to grow all this plant food that all these vegans are eating, right? That is, it puts nothing back in the soil, and it kills a ton of small animals and birds and mice from when they do the harvesting, and it displaces tons of animals and ecosystems. So I could make a case that veganism is worse for the environment. I have a very good case that it is. It's just no one wants to hear that case, and there's only a few scientists that are willing to go out on a limb and try to promote this information that all your plant food is taking from the soil. It's creating these big monocultures. It's, you know, all these processed foods are so much more energy intensive to make and box and package and ship and all this stuff, when we could just be putting a cow on a piece of land and letting it do its thing, and we can have amazing bioavailable nutrition, right? So then there's a nutritional argument. So they're saying that meat is bad. They're saying we should all be plant-based, all this kind of stuff. So that all breaks down when you look at how we did this science, right? That you mentioned, the Ansel Keys, that stuff turned out to not be true when his work on saturated fat and cholesterol. So the bigger picture is there's context to nutrition and why people, like you said, we both said, if you come at something from a 300-pound person, you can do almost anything and will lose weight. So this is actually kind of where all the problems lie, because people don't understand the nuance of this, is that there's many ways to lose weight. There's many ways to do things, but you're cutting out the bad things. So if you start from there, then you realize that the meat isn't the bad thing, right? It's that millions of people are improve their health by doing low carb, keto, paleo, carnivore, whatever it may be. And they're eating tons of meat. So they got rid of the bad stuff, right? So once you get rid of the things we mentioned earlier, the refined grains, sugar, and vegetable oils, there's no problem with the meat. The meat is actually the good thing. So they are taking this from the opposite angle, where they say, well, meat is bad. So they have this idea that eating meat is evil. So then they say, so the problem is when you're eating a bunch of fat and carbs together. Okay, that's the main problem. So why two different people get healthy on two different diets that are completely opposite, vegan or in carnivore, the opposite ends of the spectrum, is because they're not eating the fat and the carbs together. They're cutting out the bad stuff and they're not combining this. They're putting, you know, they're eating. That's where the problems occur. So the vegans are like, yeah, I cut out meat and I feel great. And I'm like, okay, well, temporarily you do, but you just cut out all the fat. And now you're if you're eating low fat enough, then yes, you can lose weight. But then the problem is you're not, it's not nutritionally complete and problems are going to develop in the future. So you see that nutritionally, there's this context there where there's problems with nutrition in the world because people are eating the high fat and high carb at the same time. The average diet is 40% carb, 40% fat, 20% protein. That's a perfect mix of carb and fat. And that's a perfect mix of how people gain weight. That's how animals in nature gain weight, is with that mix. So I can see their point where they're thinking that meat is bad because in their context of we shouldn't kill animals, therefore you shouldn't eat meat, therefore the way to eat, we have to eat very low fat with no animal foods, and then yes, you can be healthy that way. But you're not looking at the context, you're not being truthful in looking at the other side that, yeah, or you could do the exact opposite and eat only meat and be perfectly healthy. So yeah, there's a nutrition there.
Yeah, the points that you were making there, Brian, were spot on. And it's, I see it all the time. It's from the background that I come from, pretty balls deep into nutrition, and I have been for a long time. And I've seen the industry itself go through multiple transitions into different sort of paradigms. First, it was all about the high protein, or let's say go even backtrack a little bit. It was about the Atkins diet, mm-hmm. which is okay. So low carb, but then it was like low carb, real high protein and like low fat. And that's going to fuck you up in the long run.
Yeah. That's,
and then we just really sort of transition into like real high protein. Like that was a real main focus, that it was all about the protein. And then we're starting to transition out of that now, going back into what is a more natural based diet, which is going to be a higher fat, based diet, animal fats with the fat soluble, vitamins in it. And I was just to kind of touch base on what you were saying then about putting it into context of how people lose weight. If they're in these extreme end of the scales where they just say you've got someone who's 250 pounds overweight, or I really should know what that is in kilograms and stone for the UK.
Yeah, like 100 kilos or 120 kilos. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Signed. Let's go for that. And you're overweight, and then you decide to go on a vegan diet. So pretty much if you're on a vegan diet, it's going to be hard for you in order to get the calories in to put on or maintain that weight. So you're going to be in a calorie deficit. Mm-hmm. So because of that, you're going to lose weight, and you will feel better because you're cutting out, like you said, the sugars, the hydrogenated vegetable oils, the oxidized polyunsaturated fats, the refined grains. And then when you cut this stuff out, you are going to feel better. But then if all you're consuming then is plant material, your body's just not built to consume that over and over and over and over and over again. It was always and should always be a seasonal thing.
Yeah.
It's very, like, very selective in the fruit and vegetable we take or we consume. It's all seasonal. It's all attached. It's all heavily attached to the seasons. In the winter, we would have been like in our hunter-gatherer stages back in the Pleistocene era. We would have been really in a deep ketogenic state. We would have been hunting megafauna. We would have been living off animal fats and animal organ meat. Mm-hmm. And then as it was in the summer, we would have then transitioned into being kind of on the cusp of ketosis and kind of coming out of it. But we would have had that metabolic flexibility where we would have consumed some more fruits. We would have consumed some more vegetables, depending on where you're placed in the world. And the increased exposure to sunlight with the vitamin D would have mitigated the effect of the increased carbohydrate intake. And it's just interesting, man, because I know from reading your posts and listening to a few of your own podcasts that you're very switched on when it comes to Weston A. Price.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's someone who I've been sort of into for a long time. I come across his work through the work of Dr. Catherine Shanahan. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Yeah, I read her book. Great book.
Yeah, Deep Nutrition is a great book, man. And then from there, it was with her and Nora Gagaudas, mm-hmm. that I was really into a few years ago. And that really introduced me into the Weston A. Price, his sort of philosophy on health and nutrition. And it just makes so much sense. And when you look at his research, that's completely unbiased. And it really does lay down the true perimeters of health and well-being, vitality, and through the foods that we eat. So if you wouldn't mind, man, if you want to jump in on that and just kind of talk about what a traditional ancestral diet is and what is it we're missing today? Like, it's so, like Nora says it great, that we're living in a time where we have an unnatural abundance of unnatural food-like substances. And mm-hmm. We've completely lost touch with our dietary needs in terms of the intrinsic value, nutritional density of the foods that we consume. And we're pretty much like, food is pretty much like a source of entertainment for most.
Oh yeah. And that's one of the main problems. Yeah. So yes, love those. I'm looking at her book too. It's sitting on my desk here. I didn't.
Well, what have you got?
I got her Primal Body, Primal Mind. I didn't read it.
That's the best one.
Yeah. So I have so many books. Yeah, Trust is so good. So many books. I read books nonstop. I'm only about 30 pages into that, and I already know it's the best. Just that intro, I'm like, all right, I'm on board.
Yeah, man. Trust, Nora's amazing. Yeah. You're gonna love that book. You should definitely get her on your podcast.
Oh
as well.
Yeah. I'm waiting to finish it to ask her. So yeah, our ancestors had it all figured out, right? Food was our nutrition, right? Our medicine. It was our sustenance. It was delicious, but it also gave us everything that we needed, and we knew that. So I think the Weston A. Price stuff is so interesting because he went all over the world, he went to the top of the Swiss Alps to islands in the middle of nowhere. And they all had these same principles behind how they ate, and they all included animal foods, right? These were the things that they sought after the most, was animal fats and protein. And, you know, there's all different environments. And so it was all, you know, different things, but that was a common theme, especially around pregnancy. It was also interesting is that they knew instinctively that they needed to eat these highly nutrient dense animal foods when they were getting ready to have kids, and they would be eating organ meats, bone marrow, the fat, seafood, eggs, grass-fed butter, like all these things were most important to them. And they just knew, like, this is the wisdom of the people that came before us is there for a reason. And we've kind of lost that. Even our grandparents actually kind of still had it. If some people have grandparents that are old enough, they knew to eat liver and they knew about cod liver oil, right? They were still eating. They're like, they ate real butter. They knew to not eat all this processed trash. So yes, our ancestors knew a lot more than we did about nutrition. And so Weston Price found that they all had perfectly shaped jaws and teeth, which is really interesting, is how important it is to eat this proper nutrition and your development. They were all strong and healthy. And then the minute they ate these westernized foods, they became sick. Their teeth fell out. They had misshapen jaws and they got type 2 diabetes and obesity. And so, yeah, he found the exact same things that we keep repeating. The commonality between all of them was once they started eating the sugar, refined grains and vegetable oils is when things went bad.
Yeah, it's and it's very apparent in today's age. If you just, like, for anyone that's listening, check out the you can look up the Maasai tribe, which is a African tribe in I forgot what country it is. I want to say Kenya.
Yeah, I think it's Kenya.
Yeah, honestly. And if you check them out, they've got like perfect bone structure. And there's something that kind of a bit of a tangent that that Dr. Catherine Shanahan brings up in her book, which I really liked because my sort of brand, Primal Alchemy, is very much, as much as it is about sort of exercise, nutrition, there's a lot of spirituality involved in it. And what she brings up is the natural growth into the golden ratio. And the golden ratio is a sort of a spiritual constant that gets brought up a lot in terms of how nature grows when it's provided everything that it needs for optimal growth. And she, yeah, what Dr. Kate put that, like, noted in her book is that she got photographs of the tribe members, and she put a, like, a sort of an overlay of the perfect body in accordance to the golden. So if a body was to grow in accordance to the golden ratio, mm-hmm. or divine proportion, you could call it, and overlay it over these tribal members, they fitted it. Like, their skeletal structure, their facial structure was bang on. And it just shows that if you live in accordance to nature, you will grow in accordance to nature. Yeah. You will fulfill your sort of genetic blueprint that nature had designed for you. And if you grow into it, you will align yourself with perfect health, like literally perfect health. Like, they haven't got any issues. And if you begin to stray from this this ancestral diet, you begin to see it in today. Like, if you go and grab a, let's just throw a number out in the park, let's say you go and grab like a 25 year old, like a random 25 year old, and bring them in, and then you take a photograph of their, so you've got them where you've got a full frontal picture of their stature, and then you do a facial shot as well. It's very rare that you're going to find anyone that sort of matches the that sort of blueprint, that matches the geometry of the golden ratio. And it's because most of us have just, especially my age group, like, I knew what I grew up on. I did not grow up on animal fats, organ meats, real high nutritional dense food. I grew up on turkey Twizzlers and chocolate and sugar, processed shit, shit tons of, like, I remember this is a story that just literally popped up into my head. When I was like 12, I was in a cafe with my mum, and I remember just ripping open like 10 sachets of Splendor, which is aspartame, and just downing it because it was like real sweet, and I loved the taste back then. And I'm looking back on myself like, what the fuck were you doing, you stupid shit? Like, the damage that would have done, like, just smashing artificial sweeteners, just smashing hydrogenated fats, just real. And when I first started getting into health and fitness when I was about 15, it's when I started to become aware of it, or so I thought. I remember distinctly going across the supermarket aisles and just looking for anything that was low in saturated fat. And if it was low in saturated fat, I was like, yes, this is what I'm going to eat. And that was my main primer. Like, I'd always look at the saturated fat, and if it was low, I thought it was healthy. And yeah, obviously, thankfully, as time progressed, I wised up and started to really implement a correct sort of optimal diet. But it's so interesting, man. It's so interesting, the easy mistakes that we fall into, which is very much contradicts. It's the complete opposite. Like, everything that we do today is the complete opposite of what we did back when we were at our healthiest. And where do you see the biggest issues lie in today's age, from looking at the diet that we had back in the Pleistocene era, or even the early Holocene, which is the time epoch that we're in now, before there was such an emphasis on heavy farming and agricultural based food production? Where do you see the troubles lie?
Well, the problem is our culture. is so entrenched in this that it's almost impossible to undo it. It's not impossible though. I mean, it's just going to take years. So the culture is so engulfed in this, and the food industries are so engulfed in this that it just takes a while to undo. It takes people one at a time to understand this stuff and then go back to the way we used to do things. And I love Gary Fecke. I'll quote him again. He calls it fresh local seasonal. If everyone just started eating fresh local seasonal, it's almost by definition sort of low carb, high fat. And it's just these foods that come naturally, like you said, in season, right? Different seasons, we had different foods. And yeah, we're not shipping in things around the world. Like, you're not shipping in a banana from South America so you can eat it in the winter. I mean, that's not natural at all. But then it's normal to us. Like, these vegans are like, oh yeah, banana is so healthy. It's so great for the environment. Cows are so bad. Well, I'm eating a cow that came from a few miles from here because I went to the farmer's market, and you're eating a banana that came from Nicaragua. Like, that's like, how are you trying to tell me about what's good for the environment? And that banana is stuffed with sugar, and it doesn't actually have many nutrients in it. That's another thing that's surprising to me, is when I actually started looking up the nutrient content of fruit, it's terrible. You're getting like a few little bits of vitamins and minerals and hundreds, you know, times amount of sugar. It's just, it's not a nutrient dense food at all. that's just like a big lie. So yeah, with our sort of where we're at in general is, this is our culture and we need to slowly change it. It's hard to eat this way because our culture is you just pull into a McDonald's or you go to a restaurant and everything is, it has a bun on it or a patty. A bread, a wrap, a tortilla, fries. I mean, it's pretty hard to do this. The people who are doing it successfully are kind of cooking for themselves. So it kind of takes like a lot of change and a lot of people to realize that the food industry is working against them. The food industry's goal is to make money, right? I don't get why people take advice. A lot of this advice trickles down of nutrition information from companies that care nothing about your nutrition. They care about selling their product. So yeah, if people start realizing that these sort of cultural norms that we just take for granted are working against us, then we can start undoing them. And then it's just about eating whole foods. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I just feel like people are so accustomed today to instant gratification, and it's easy just to get that quick fix dopamine response where people have become lazy. It's literally, if you're hungry, you can just, like you said, just, it's like a 5-minute car ride, like anywhere. It might be a little bit different in the States because it's such a big country, but here in England, yeah, it's like in England, for example, I'm sat here now. If just say I'm hungry, I could be like, right, I know that within a 5 to 10 minute radius of drive, I'll be able to get a McDonald's and get food served to me in like 5 minutes. If I didn't have a girlfriend and I wanted that release, I'm a click away from Pornhub. Mm-hmm. If there's so many things that are just on the plate for us today where it's really disconnected us with one of the vital aspects of being human, which is facing adversity or going through times of challenge where you don't have it easy. You need to have that friction. You need to have that get up and go. And you need to put effort into things. And we've just been kind of sedated in like our motivational levels, and that really waters into everything. It trickles down into our choices of food, into our choices of lifestyle, into our choices of following our purpose in life. And yeah, you've just got these big multinational corporations that are just really kind of just reaping the benefits of that. They've got us where they need us, and they're just keep feeding us whatever they need. Mm-hmm. And it's, if the trend is that we're going to be going vegan, then hey, let's put on the vegan hat and let's push it till it fades. And then if that changes to the ketogenic diet, then hey, Nestle's going to release a new ketogenic cereal.
Yeah.
It's literally, you know, the agenda by whatever the big corporations like Nestle, like Heinz, like Unilever, like Coca-Cola, all these sort of big food corps. You know what the plan is when they pick it, when they pick up and start pushing products to people.
You just see it on the packaging or what's the marketing. You can just flip on the TV and look at a commercial, or you go and look at a package and what are they promoting? It changes. I actually was, for the film, I was trying to shoot some low-fat products in the grocery store, and I actually couldn't really find many. Because I never really go in those middle aisles of the grocery store. You know, I don't buy that trash. But so I was in there picking up frozen dinners and all that stuff. And I know that it's shifting, because instead of promoting low fat on the package, it was saying how much protein's in it, because they're like, oh, people are into this now. So yeah, you can see where the wind is blowing.
Yeah, for sure, man. And it'd be good, man, just for you to give a little bit more information on what you're doing with this whole Food Lies doc. Like, I find it fascinating, and I know that a lot of the listeners who tuned into this would be more than happy to sort of help you out on this. So what's going on, man? Like, where are you at with it, and what's the whole premise of it? And yeah, feel free to shoot away on this one.
Yeah, for sure. So this film is trying to fight all this stuff, fight the vegan propaganda. It's kind of a lot of just what we've talked about today, right? The film goes over what happened in the last 50 years that we went so wrong, right? How did we get the science so wrong? How did we start pushing these low fat products? And right when we started introducing these guidelines is right when the obesity and type 2 diabetes epidemic began, and it's been on the rise ever since. Right. So we're looking at that. And then I'm looking at, what are humans supposed to eat? Let's look at the entire history. Let's look at all the scientific evidence. Let's look at evolution. Let's look at our ancestors. Let's look at modern science. Let's look at biochemistry, genetics, everything. We're randomized controlled trials, clinical observations, epidemiology, even. We're going to look at it all and kind of come to some conclusions. And then we'll look at the environment side too. It's like, okay, so if we know that this is what we should be eating, how can we do it sustainably? And the really cool thing is that it all lines up so perfectly. When you look at all that science and different lines of evidence that I mentioned, they all fall on the same thing. Everything lines up. And that's how I know this is correct. And then when you look at the vegan side, their arguments fall apart. There's tons of holes in their theories, right? And when I laid everything out, there's no holes in mine. Everything makes sense, right? So that's what we're doing with the film. And we've been shooting for over a year. I have all these awesome researchers and scientists and big names in this world that I really respect. And they've all been very gracious, and we got so much good footage, and we're starting to edit now. We're in post-production. And so, yeah, we do need people's help, though. We're doing this all self-funded. I've used a lot of my own money, even though I don't even have much money, using all my time. I quit my job to do this. And so we're kind of looking for people to go on Indiegogo and support us. And we're doing one more crowdfunding to get the post-production done, because, you know, it takes a lot of money to edit it and get the animations and the graphics and the sound and make that all really good so we can get it on Netflix, which is a goal, so everyone can see it. So if people could go to Indiegogo, I'll give you the link, but you can also go to foodlies.org, and there you can find out more about the film, look at the trailer, and support us.
Yeah, I'll post that in the show notes as well, man, because it's definitely something that I want everybody that's listening to look into, and yeah, help Brian out, because this is an honest, honorable path that Brian's walking in, trying to get information out there that really is world changing. Like, it is, because yeah, this is the nutrition that we evolved with, and it's the nutrition that we need to further our evolution.
I think it's going to be insane. In a couple hundred years, we're going to look back at this time from, say, 1960 to 2020 as just an absurd blip in history that was just out of this world. That we're like, so for all of time, we had proper views of nutrition. Then we just went off the rails for these 60 years. Everyone got fat and sick. and then things change back. So yeah, I'm just trying to help change us back. That's what you're trying to do with your work, your podcast. I'm just a communicator. I'm here trying to, you know, just spread this information from all the people that I respect in this community, pushing this information and, you know, spreading the science of why this is what we should be doing. And so, yeah, that's the goal.
Sam, brother, I know that you are short for time. There's one thing that I would like to know, man, before we kind of tie this one up a little bit, is for anyone that hasn't checked Brian's page out, Food Lies, you can see pictures of Brian, and Brian, you're in good shape, bro. It's like you can tell that you obviously take care of yourself. So what is your day-to-day diet? Like, if you were to give us like a daily breakdown, like what sort of stuff would you take? Is there, do you take any supplements, or do you keep it strictly food based? Like, what sort of stuff do you take?
Yeah, so I try to keep things really simple with diet and exercise, and I'm kind of almost doing it as to make a point for others that it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to spend hours and hours in the gym. You don't have to be doing marathons. You don't have to be taking a million supplements. You don't have to be spending a lot of money. You don't have to be making complicated food and doing calculations. So every single thing I do is simple. So I eat twice a day. So I eat in a condensed eating window. I think breakfast being the most important meal of the day is totally bogus and made up by the food industry.
Kellogg's. Yeah,
it actually was Kellogg's and Leonard Cooper. They were kind of behind that. And so, but you could choose to eat in an earlier window, right? You could choose to eat breakfast and lunch, but I don't think there's any purpose in eating dinner if you're doing that. If you're eating, you know, you should be, I believe in eating large meals that satisfy you, and then you don't think about food otherwise. So I get a big, you know, big plate of nutrition and I'm fine. I'm working. I'm not thinking about it. My energy's stable. Everything's good. So around, you know, say 12 or 1, somewhere around there for lunchtime, I'll just cook up a big steak and then maybe, you know, have some stuff on the side. Like I'm interested in, you know, kind of fermented vegetables these days. I think I stopped eating so many vegetables. I think there's like kind of downsides to them and they're just not as bioavailable, the nutrition in them. And there's a lot more to that story. But I think when you ferment vegetables, it takes out some of these anti-nutrients and opens up some of these good nutrients. So could eat like a little kimchi, sauerkraut, you know. So, you know, I'll get some meat, you know, sausage, eggs, ground beef, and then with this little bit of side of some vegetables, maybe I'll cook some spinach and bacon fat. So, you know, cook some ground beef with cheese, throw in a couple eggs on it. You know, this stuff is delicious and it's really simple. There's only a few ingredients and it's affordable, right? So all the things line up. It's affordable, it's easy, it's delicious. I'm like cheering. I made a joke the other day, like I'm sitting by myself fist pumping, eating this food and I'm getting healthier. I lost weight on this food and it's so good. So that's my lunch. Then I work for 7 hours. Don't think about food. Then I work out. And I think this is important too. I have these 20-minute workouts. They're so simple, they're easy. And I think it's just this cardio thing that you need to do like miles and miles of cardio is just a bad idea. I mean, if you want to do it, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're into running, go for it. It's great. But many people, it's not doing them much good, or it's maybe even breaking down their body. It's not a good way to lose weight. I do stuff. I just spend 20 minutes. I do a 5-minute warm up and then I spend 20 minutes doing like push ups, pull ups, dips, squats, you know, some dumbbells, really simple stuff. I got a weight vest. So I put on the weight vest because I, you know, I'm getting stronger and I need more weight. Just doing, you know what I mean? Dips, pull-ups, push-ups, squats. It's deadlift with dumbbells. It's really simple. You're doing 20 minutes of work. You're going to failure and you're going to get stronger. And then I eat again, right? So then I have my dinner. It's just the same kind of stuff. I'll just grab a protein and then maybe a side of vegetables and get some salmon, sardines. I eat sardines with eggs, maybe a sardine salad if I want to have a little bit of, you know, fresh vegetables. And that's it. Yeah. I mean, I try not to do much else than that. I mean, I do drink some bone broth and maybe I'll put in some like magnesium and potassium in there as like my only real supplements. I mean, these are just like some electrolytes that are good to have, especially people who are transitioning into fat adaptation. You might want to make sure you're getting your electrolytes, you're getting your salt, your magnesium, your potassium. But yeah, so I like to just do a little after dinner drink kind of thing where I'm, you know, drinking some bone broth with some electrolytes in it and I'm set. And you know, I've been doing this for about a year, this specific plan, and had great body composition changes. Haven't got sick in 4.5 years since I started kind of cutting out all the bad things that we mentioned. And yeah, man, feeling great.
Nice, man. That was a good breakdown. And it's have you got on the raw liver hype yet? Have you sat down and watched one of the
I don't raw... do raw.
Yeah.
I do eat liver and a couple times a month for sure. And I'll cut it up and put it in some ground beef. I've done a lot of things with liver and I'll eat some oysters. I think that's really great to get some fresh oysters. Yeah. And yeah, I've been trying to get into more of this nutrient dense stuff, like make my own bone broth, or I don't know. I'm like, go to like the Asian market and I'm like eating these little fish. Like they're like, they have these dried sardine or anchovies, I guess they are, just and eat them whole with their head on them and everything.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, man. Just go full out brood on that. Go out savage. Yeah. Trust, man. Try that raw liver. It makes the liver taste so much better. Like if I cook liver, it's got that look. I don't know. There's a taste to it where I'm like, oh man, I could only smash a little bit of this, but I could get through quite a lot of raw liver. You just sit there and just go straight savage and just go at it. And it's pretty tasty. And the same with any of those raw organ meats. I know it kind of paints a picture in someone's mind as in like, what the fuck are you doing? But it's nice, man. It's
I'm gonna do it.
Something that, yeah, give it a try, man, and send me a picture of you.
I have some liver in my freezer, actually. I have some liver.
Yeah, do it, man.
I'll get it out.
Defrost it and just go at it, and then tag me in it in your story or something, man. It'd be funny.
All right.
But yeah, Brian, let's tie things up then, because I know that you're short on time. So really, dude, I really enjoyed this, and thanks for breaking everything down for us. And I think a lot of valuable information was dropped today, which was great, and hopefully everyone that's been listening is got a bit of a clearer picture in terms of what this whole agenda is that we're sort of living within the time frame of, and where we've been in the past and where we're going to go in the future with it. So thanks again for coming on, Brian. Just one last thing before you go, dude. I always ask the guests that come on if they could give any one tip, be it physical, mental, or spiritual, in order to help take yourself to that sort of next level, what would it be for you?
Yeah, well,
it's a hard one.
That's hard. Yeah. So, I mean, we've talked about food and nutrition enough, so I won't do a food one. I'm going to do, I think it's really important, and what's really kept me in good shape mentally, physically, and socially my whole life is join a sport or a club, and once a week just go do something out there. It could be, you know, I do beach volleyball, like I do flag football, all kinds of different something like that, where you're getting outside, you're getting exercise, obviously you're meeting people, you're meeting new people, you're accountable for that too, right? It keeps you in check, and I think it'll help you stay in line during the week. So if you're going to want to pull through McDonald's, you know, maybe you won't, because you're like, hey, I got to go play beach volleyball and I don't want to be, you know, out of shape. I don't want to look fat, whatever it is. Just get something in your life that's, I think, ideally just like a weekly thing, and it just helps, gives you a lot of more structure and a lot of benefits around that.
All right, man. Easy as that. So, well, thanks for the tip, Brian. Guys, again, take on everything we've said. And as I always say in every podcast, this is our truth. This is what we've found. This is we've done the work, and this is, we've found our own truth. Don't take everything we say as the holy scripture. Which it kind of is, but don't take it like that. You need to go out and do your own research. If you need to research both sides of the story, and find what resonates with your core. Try it. Experiment with yourself. That's what it's all about. Find what works for you. And yeah, what me and Brian have gone over today is really important information. And if you're looking at readjusting your dietary path, your dietary conditioning, and yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Let's call it a day. I don't want to keep running. Right. So guys, thanks for joining in. Brian, thanks for coming on, dude. And that's going to be episode 21 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour, rolling out.